This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
3-2 is hit high and deep to left. It is gone. Back to the bleachers. 2-0 in the first.
Like that, a direct path to the baseball. Great results.
2-0. 1-1 is hit a ton in the air. Deep left center. It's gone. It's the Cubs 6, Vargas 3.
And that played, that line drive had enough height to it with the wind at its tail to just get it out of here. Just over the basket in center field, as you said it, Vargas having a day.
Swing and a one-hopper. Oh, what a pick at third by Vargas. Throw to first. He got him.
Play of the game and maybe play of the week for the White Sox.
Have a day, Mr. Miguel Vargas. What a fantastic day for him. Albeit it did come in a loss. It did not go the way that Miguel Vargas wanted when it came to the team. But nevertheless, fantastic performance by Miguel Vargas against the Cubs yesterday at Wrigley Field. Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Mellor as we provide some White Sox talk, some baseball talk with you for the next couple of hours before our pregame coverage gets going ahead of game number 2 of 3 at Wrigley between the White Sox and Cubs during the Crosstown Series this weekend. It'll be Sean Burke being opposed by Matthew Boyd today on the mound for your pitching opposition. So good one in store for that. And hopefully the White Sox can bounce back and get a couple of wins now after a 13-3 loss yesterday. Not any fault, though, of Miguel Vargas, who was absolutely spectacular yesterday, going 4-for-4 with a couple of home runs. He's been absolutely mashing over the last month. It's been incredible to see what Miguel Vargas has been able to do. He is 26-for-74 with 5 doubles, 5 home runs, 13 RBIs, and 12 runs scored in 20 games since April 23rd. That's a .351 average. The star of the game yesterday for the Chicago White Sox, Miguel Vargas, joins me right now on White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Mellor here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Miggy, man, I know it didn't come in the result that you wanted, but you were locked in yesterday against the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, was a good day personally for me, you know. Obviously, we don't get the result we wanted, but you know, it was fun to be, you know, in front of the Chicago fans playing a baseball game.
Miguel Vargas joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Miguel, did you feel that extra enthusiasm or juice in the stadium being a part of this big rivalry game between the White Sox and Cubs? Did you feel that extra emotion in the stands yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think, you know, I never played this series before. This is my first time doing it. And, you know, I wasn't sure how important that is for the city. And then, you know, I was very impressed how many people show up. And, you know, the atmosphere they have in the game was very huge.
Well, you definitely stepped up and played your best yesterday. Before we get to the hitting, though, Miggy, the defense. Look, you probably knew what you were capable of at third base, but not just yesterday. You make a fabulous play yesterday, but all season long, you've really done a great job at third base, not just picking the ball, but making some great throws as well. I have to say, I have been thoroughly impressed watching you all year, man, third base. Do you take extra pride playing third base like that, like you have all year?
Yeah, I mean, that was a big challenge for me coming up this year. I think, you know, the last couple of years I've been playing all different positions every year. So, you know, being back to my natural position made me feel more comfortable. And, you know, it was a really challenge for me to come on there and be consistent and, you know, try to help my team in the defensive side too. And, you know, be ready every day. I think that that been helped me a lot in the defensive side.
Well, I will give you a round of applause, Miguel Vargas, because I will tell you, it's not just when you're at the plate lately, but when you play defense and anything gets hit to you, I always feel like something good's going to happen. It's been fun to watch you play really good defense at third base, and not just third base. I will say, you mentioned how, you know, you've been getting more comfortable going back to your natural position, but you've played first base a little bit this year, and you've made a couple nice snags at first as well. So it's something that you have to take great pride in, your versatility.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we got a bunch of young team, and I think, you know, obviously we all trying to get the opportunity and, you know, prove that we can play in this league. And, you know, to bring a little bit of versatility to the team, I think that's the best for all of us. And, you know, obviously going to first and, you know, trying to you know, help my team and help the pitcher to make some outs, and I think that's what makes me more comfortable out there.
You've certainly done that. Miguel Vargas joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Miguel, so what's been the breakthrough over the last month? You've been excellent at the plate. Now, I know the season started out, you had to make a slight adjustment, so what's been going on for you at the plate where you've really made some huge strides here lately?
I mean, you know, it was just a little change that I did when we were in Minnesota. The last time we met in Minnesota, and I think, you know, having seen the result right away, I think that made me more comfortable to trust what I was doing, and then, you know, I feel very good. I think, you know, just being more consistent is what gonna make me, you know, be better out there in the play, and I think that's what I show up, and I'm glad that happened.
So Will Venable has spoke about how you have made that adjustment, and he's given you a lot of credit for being able to do it in season. So does it help to see those results right away to kind of stick with it? Does it feel natural for you at this point, the adjustment that you were able to make with your hand positioning?
Yeah, like I said before, it wasn't, you know, a big adjustment, just, you know, something that I have to, you know, be better, and, you know, something that really can help me on the future. And, you know, I wasn't thinking that gonna get a result right away because it's hard to get it. But, you know, once I started seeing a lot of good results, I'm starting, you know, trust it more and follow it more what I was doing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's definitely working for you, so keep that up. What's it been like for you this year, Miguel, with Will Venable as your manager? He every time I get a chance to talk with him, he seems like a very positive guy, like he's keeping the locker room in good spirits. Have you enjoyed playing for Will Venable so far this season?
Yeah, for sure, man. Since day one, then we chose to spring training, he was treating everybody well and, you know, making sure everybody was doing his best. And, you know, that's what, you know, leaders of the clubhouse all about. And, you know, I think having him as a manager has been great for, you know, everybody here. And, you know, I think it has been great for me to having him here.
Last thing I have for you, Miguel, as I let you go, how impressed have you been with your rookie catcher, Edgar Caro, behind the plate and at the plate so far this year? He's been doing both to a really successful start to his career. Have you been impressed by the young rookie catcher?
I mean, not at all. I'm not being impressed at all. I know Edgar Caro for so long. I saw him playing for like the last 5 years, and then I see how he's been doing, and then, you know, just coming to the big league now and see him playing well and playing how he, you know, he always been playing is great. You know, obviously he still have a lot of things to learn, but, you know, like everybody else here. And then, you know, I think for him, the future is very bright, and I'm very proud of the job he's been doing, for sure.
I love it. You've seen him for 5 years. You knew it was coming. You knew he was going to be good when he got to the majors. Okay, Miguel, I'm going to let you go, but I have to tell you, you've got two home runs so far at Wrigley. No pressure, but a couple years ago, Jose Abreu hit 6 home runs at Wrigley Field in one series, so you got something to shoot for, okay, my man?
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Miguel. Miguel Vargas joining us here on White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. Fun conversation with the man who has absolutely been on fire for the last month or so, just crushing it. Again, a couple of home runs yesterday, went 4-for-4. And I'm not kidding. Defensively, watching Miguel Vargas become a Hoover out there. He's a vacuum cleaner. Everything that gets down the line at third base, I feel extremely comfortable with him manning the hot corner. And I did not think by any means that was going to be the case entering the season. So to see his development and watch him go back to the position that he said his more natural position, something that he's been playing for the majority of his life, to get back there, I'm sure that has helped as well with the transformation that we've seen at the plate. Because when you think about it, and you go out there and you can go feel comfortable in the field and not have that extra pressure or concern that the position you're manning defensively is also going to be a problem, right? If you don't have to worry so much about that, you can kind of just, you know, it's freeing. You can go back then when you're actually hitting and you're not worrying about any, you know, letting your team down for what you're doing defensively. And I really do think that is something that can't just be dismissed summarily now that Miguel Vargas is hitting. I do think that might be playing somewhat of a role. And it also, it may have allowed him the opportunity to make this in-season adjustment that has paid almost immediate dividends. Like I said, just 26 for his last 74, five homers. And by the way, it's not just the fact that he's getting hits, but we've always known that Miguel Vargas has some pretty solid plate discipline. And over the last 30 days, Vargas has an on-base percentage of .386. Yeah, so he's, you know, touching up close to the old 400 mark, which is the elite of the elite. Juan Soto, .398 over the last 30 days. So Miguel Vargas, .386 on base, and now the power is starting to come. So that has been an enjoyable, it's been an enjoyable revelation this season that I didn't necessarily see coming. And I'm hoping it continues because he is a good guy. And I will tell you, when I'm in the clubhouse during home games for the White Sox, whenever they're at Wrigley Field, I will tell you, he has Miguel Vargas is positive, upbeat, has a good presence in the clubhouse. So I'm happy for that guy that he's been able to turn it around this season, especially after the way it ended last year. You know, I think a lot of White Sox fans were questioning just exactly what the White Sox had obtained. And so to see him really have this great turnaround this year, I'm hoping that he can continue to roll, because not just for the fact that he's a good guy, but, oh, by the way, the White Sox certainly could use a building block in the middle of their order that you could count on as a foundational piece going forward. And he's hit first, he's hit second, he's hit third, he's hit fourth all season long. And really, he's been productive anywhere Will Venable has placed him in the lineup. So really good to see that from Miguel Vargas, who was the star of the day yesterday. I wish we were so close. I thought we had the Miguel Vargas game on our hands. I thought it was coming, especially the way the game started with his home run early in the game. I was like, okay, this is going to be the Miguel Vargas game against the Cubs. Unfortunately, I think it turned into the Pete Crow Armstrong game for the Cubs, which is slightly annoying, but nevertheless, it was still fun to watch Miguel Vargas be so productive yesterday. He is hitting second at third base today for the White Sox. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Hey, White Sox fans, learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp presented by Wintrust. Starting at $165, kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a 4-day baseball camp offered at over 35 locations throughout the Chicagoland area. Campers will receive a Sox swag bag with a custom sliding mitt, pack of Topps baseball cards, and more. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/play. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Plenty of White Sox and Cubs conversation coming your way. I will get you the starting lineup for both the White Sox and Cubs when we come back for today's game right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. It is Saturday. That means you're in the middle of White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, hot dog, drink, bag of chips, cookie, plus a souvenir 125th anniversary water bottle. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. Before I get you to the starting lineups for today's game, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves. All right, starting lineups are in for today's game two at Wrigley between the White Sox and Cubs. 1:20 first pitch. Chase Mydroth leads off and plays shortstop. Miguel Vargas, the man of the hour who we just spoke with earlier today, he will be playing third base and batting second. Edgar Caro, the catcher, batting third today. Luis Robert Jr. bats cleanup in center field. DHing and batting fifth will be Andrew Vaughn. Lenin Sosa, the second baseman, bats sixth. Tim Elko, the rookie, plays first base and bats seventh. Joshua Palacios will be in right field, the lefty, batting eighth. And then rounding out the lineup for Will Venable will be Michael A. Taylor in left field today. For Craig Counsell's Cubs, he'll lead off with Pete Crow Armstrong, the lefty, in center. Another lefty right fielder, Kyle Tucker, hits second. Seiya Suzuki is in left. Left-handed first baseman Michael cleans up. Dansby Swanson plays short and hits fifth today. Ballesteros, the rookie, DH, lefty, bats sixth. Batting seventh at second base, Nico Horner. Miguel Amaya, the catcher, not Jacob, the shortstop, who is no longer on the Major League roster for the White Sox. That move happened this week. But Miguel Amaya, catching for the Cubs, bats eighth today. And then Vidal Bruhan, the third baseman, switch hitter, bats ninth for the Cubs. It will be Sean Burke opposed by left-handed pitcher Matthew Boyd for the Cubs. When we come back, we will get you set with all of the fantastic White Sox Cubs moments from over the years, over the last 25 years or so. The best moments between this great during this great rivalry between the Cubs and the White Sox. We'll do that coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Recap the game, Cap and J-Hood, weekday mornings at 7.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller as we're getting you set for game number 2 of 3 up at Wrigley Field between the White Sox and Cubs for the Crosstown Series amongst Major League Baseball's inaugural rivalry weekend. And first pitch, of course, coming your way at 1:20 today. Our pregame coverage will begin at 12:40. So I wanted to run through some of the best moments during this series for White Sox fans. And I'll start by saying it really did feel like yesterday we could be on the verge of the Miguel Vargas game against the Cubs. Unfortunately, I fear it turned into the Pete Crow Armstrong game for the Cubs. So that was disappointing, but it was still encouraging to see Miguel Vargas do what he did, 4-for-4, get a couple of home runs and a stellar defensive play. So he continues to look like he very well could be breaking out, and the very reason why Chris Getz made him the centerpiece at the trade deadline when he offloaded Eric Fetty and Michael Kopech. So that is some continued good news. Just unfortunate that the White Sox could not capitalize on what could have been the Miguel Vargas game against the Cubs. Hopefully today, maybe Miguel Vargas goes off for another two home runs and he has himself a weekend similar to the one that Jose Abreu had back in the 2020 season. Recall, Jose Abreu, it was the COVID-shortened year, and Jose Abreu actually ended up winning the AL MVP that season, and I think largely based on the strength of what he did in one weekend at Wrigley Field.
Stayed up. Jose swats it left center field, way back there at the wall. Bring them all home. Three-run home run. Jose Abreu, and the Sox have stormed out to a 5-0 lead.
Jose Abreu is red hot.
2-2. Oh, one more for the road. Bring him home again. It's still bouncing around. Second one tonight for Jose. So now it's about 2,500 feet.
It's on Jupiter, and they'd be divided.
Jose to right field. Well struck. Very well struck and out of here. Bring him home for the lead. Top six.
That man has a sense of urgency and a flair for the dramatic. He untied the ball game. Kyle Hendricks gives up an opposite field home run, and Jose Abreu comes through once again to lead the way. And Contreras is telling him, bounce it, it's 0-2.
Oh, it hung. Jose in the air, left field, way back. Bring him home again. Look out, Maglio. A cement mixer to beat all cement mixers, and it's 5-2.
Jose got that curveball. It got too much of the plate. Contreras gave him the curveball sign. He patted the ground.
0-2. Jose in the air left field. One more time. Bring him home.
Well, we told you back in the sixth inning that Jose sometimes takes it into his own hands. We didn't believe at that point that three home runs later, he'd have a perfect night, 4-for-4 with a walk, and three bombs.
Jose in the air, way back, oh my goodness! Batman Jose is at it again, and Darvish can only laugh. This is outrageous!
Outrageous indeed, Jason Benetti, as Jose Abreu would hit six home runs in a weekend series, three games against the Cubs back in 2020. That actually meant that Jose Abreu hit the second most home runs at Wrigley Field that season, behind only Ian Happ, who had eight on the season. Happ played in 32 games that year. Abreu, six home runs in three games that weekend. Absolutely astonishing. He ended up with a 375 average, 464 on base, and an 1167 OPS against the Cubs that season. Just absurd in 2020. I will say, as you heard Benetti's calls, sure is nice to have fans back in the stands, right? That's the one thing that stood out from all those highlights of Jose Abreu back in 2020, the COVID-shortened season. All right, we move to June 18th, 2019, a year earlier or so, just about. Eloy Jimenez, remember, of course, he was a key piece along with Dylan Cease in the Jose Quintana deal that the White Sox made with the Cubs as the Cubs were trying to push and extend their championship run after having won 2016, the World Series. They were trying to do what they could to stay in contention, and so they traded Cease and Eloy Jimenez for Jose Quintana. That was obviously, those were the critical pieces in that deal. And Eloy Jimenez returned to Wrigley Field, and in the ninth inning, the top of the ninth, came up and gave the White Sox a come-from-behind lead.
There's the go-ahead run, standing at first base.
Jimenez, in the air, left field! He's your hero tonight! Welcome to Wrigley!
He cracked the bat on that swing and still drove it out of the park. The bat shattered in his hands.
Thanks, Cubs, indeed, for that emphatic punctuation by Jason Benetti, which did a nice job of, I think, really encapsulating how all White Sox fans felt in that moment. Now, I will say, a few years removed, I don't think it unfolded the way that White Sox fans hoped that it would, even though Dylan Cease was extremely productive for a couple of seasons with the White Sox kind of fronting their rotation. Eloy Jimenez's tenure with the White Sox certainly did not end the way most Sox fans ended up hoping that it would. I move now to 2002, back on June 28th. I was actually in attendance for this game at then U.S. Cellular Field, now Rate Field. The White Sox were trailing 8-0 with Kerry Wood on the mound. Paul Konerko actually took a pitch in the face from Kerry Wood in this game early in the second inning. He dusted himself off, came to the plate later on, and after trailing 8-0, the White Sox mounted their comeback, led by
the ball hit hard in the left field. Brown going back. Get up! Stretch! It will! You can! Prate on the board!
Yes!
And we are right back in this ballgame.
couple of two-run shots from Paulie in that game. He was 4-for-4 with a couple of home runs. Both were two-run shots. The first one came in the fifth inning when the Cubs were leading 8-2. That obviously cut it 8-4. And then that home run in the sixth put the White Sox ahead. They went on to win that game 13-9 after trailing 8-0. And if you've been in attendance for some Sox and Cubs games, you know what the swings can be like when your team jumps out to a massive lead like that. You are certainly giving it to the opposition's fans in the stands. That just is second nature. And so to be in attendance at U.S. Cellular Field that day and going from the lowest of lows against your bitter rival to the highest of highs on that day, that was at that moment, because that was prior to 2005, obviously. In the moment, that might have been about as good as I felt leaving a baseball game back in 2002. That was a special day. Again, June 28th, 2002, when Paul Konerko helped to lead the White Sox back after trailing 8-0 to the Cubs to a 13-9 comeback win. However, I don't know if it actually matched the next game, which I'm about to talk about, which actually occurred almost a year prior to that, a little more than a year. Back on June 8th in 2001, Carlos Lee, on a Friday night, came up with the game tied up at 3 apiece, bases loaded, 2 outs in the bottom of the 10th inning, and good old El Caballo stepped to the plate against Courtney Duncan.
That ball hit deep into left field, way back. He looks up, you can't put it on the board! Yes! A grand slam homer by El Caballo, Carlos Lee, and the Sox win it here in the bottom of the 10th inning.
That one was also fantastic. Carlos Lee with the walk-off grand slam at the Cell that season in 2001. I was also in attendance for that one. I recall that was a Friday night. That was a fun way of leaving the ballpark and a very good way to start your weekend. So Carlos Lee, who always had a knack for just crushing the Cubs, he ended up hitting 39 home runs against the Cubs in his career. You know, plenty with the White Sox, also plenty also with the Brewers when he was on their team as well. Remember, obviously, Carlos Lee was part of the swap in the Scott Pasednik trade, which we all remember fondly because of what Scotty Pods was able to do at the top of the lineup during the 2005 and 2006 season, the World Series championship year in 2005. All right, so I mentioned 2005 and 2006. This, I think, still stands out to me as the most memorable moment during this series, and it happened on May 20th, 2006. So the White Sox, fresh off of their World Series championship, feeling great. The White Sox were just rolling early in that year. 2006, it did feel like the White Sox had a very legitimate shot of repeating as World Series champs, the way they came out like gangbusters, and also the way they absolutely dominated in the playoffs behind their majestic pitching. It felt like 2006, at least throughout the All-Star break, it felt like the White Sox had a very realistic chance of repeating. And May 20th, 2006, of course, A.J. Pierzynski comes barreling down at home plate with Michael Barrett behind the plate for the Cubbies.
Pierzynski wanting to know, am I going? He is going. Here comes a throw by Merton. It is a collision at the plate. And Pierzynski not only bangs into Barrett, bangs onto the plate, and here they go. Pasednik getting into it with Barrett. And now both dugouts empty behind home plate. I mean, there is some hooking going on in the bottom of two piles. Pierzynski ran right through Barrett and then slammed his hand on home plate. And Barrett came after him. Pasednik wound up more involved with Barrett than Pierzynski did.
Gotta love it. Tom Brenneman on this call on Fox as A.J. Pierzynski was punched by Michael Barrett. The White Sox would go on to crush the Cubs in that game 7-0. And as I mentioned, it just felt like 2006, at least for that first half, the White Sox were rolling, and I really did think they were going to go deep into the playoffs. Unfortunately, it didn't play out as they kind of lost some steam as the second half of the 2006 season ended. But we'll always have Barrett punching AJ, something that ultimately Barrett would eventually apologize for. So fun moments during White Sox and Cubs history as we get you set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Cubs at Wrigley Field today. First pitch coming your way at 1:20. We'll start our pregame coverage officially at 12:40. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. I don't really have a highlight package for this, but should I mention, do we have another moment that we could add to this rivalry over the past week when the Cubs claimed the Pope erroneously, and only to have the White Sox turn around and call the Cubs out, not really call them out, but kind of poke at them in jest. The Cubs, I believe, put up on the marquee, "Hey, Chicago, he's a Cubs fan." And then momentarily, within an hour or so later, the White Sox recognized that the Cubs were a bit premature on their celebration and declaration that the Pope was a Cubs fan. And quickly we found out that the Pope, Pope Leo the 14th, is indeed a White Sox fan. In fact, he was in attendance for the 2005 World Series for game number 1. The White Sox are actually going to commemorate the seats that Pope Leo was in. They're going to do that on Monday. Brooks Boyer going to be having a ceremonial. I'm not quite sure if it's going to be a plaque or what they're going to do in that section. I'll find out on Monday, obviously. But I did see a press release go out that the White Sox will be honoring the seats of His Holiness and where he sat for game 1 of the 2005 World Series. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark next Sunday, May 25th, as the White Sox take on the Texas Rangers at 1:10 p.m. The first 7,500 fans in attendance will receive Southside legend Charles Comiskey bobblehead presented by United, Chicago's hometown airline. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promo. Speaking of bobbleheads, quickly, did you see what Shohei Ohtani did the other night, Thursday night, on his second bobblehead night? In fact, he homered twice against the Athletics. Now, you may recall earlier this season when the Dodgers had Shohei Ohtani's first bobblehead night, he hit a walk-off home run. Man of the moment, at least when it comes to delivering on his bobblehead nights. And then Thursday night, Ohtani went on to homer twice early in that game. It got so out of hand that the Athletics actually turned to Johnny Pareda, their backup catcher at one point, and Pareda had an absolutely hilarious moment. He ended up striking out Ohtani, and he then called for the ball because he wanted to keep it because he struck out Ohtani. And Pareda was, it was amusing to me because he was throwing up, you know, he'd throw like a, I think he had like a ball clocked at like 49 at one point, and then he hit one at like 64. And then he would just rear back and throw 85 to 87 up high, some high chin music. And that's actually how he ended up striking out Ohtani. So it was amusing, and he called for the ball. So that made me laugh on Thursday night as the Dodgers had Ohtani's second bobblehead. I wonder how many Ohtani bobbleheads they're doing this year. I mean, not that he hasn't earned it. He went 50-50 last year. So you can understand why there might be a few Ohtani bobblehead nights at Dodger Stadium this year. Speaking of nights, though, we did have Pete Rose night on Wednesday. The White Sox were the opponent for the Reds. And prior to that, of course, we had huge news as Pete Rose was removed from the lifetime banned list on Tuesday. Ahead of that Wednesday night Pete Rose game, we talked quite a bit earlier in this. We talked quite a bit about it earlier this week. I want to delve back into it a little bit when we come back and the effects on Pete Rose, all the players who were banned in the Black Sox scandal, and Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred and why they chose to go about doing this now. We'll do that on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back on White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller as we looking forward to game 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Cubs at Wrigley Field later today. Pre-game coverage begins at 12:40. First pitch comes your way at 1:20. Len and DJ will have up around 110, although I'll let you hear from Len and GJ here momentarily from earlier in the week. I mentioned the big news around baseball, and not just in Major League Baseball, but it really penetrated your national news, was the fact that Rob Manfred lifted the, or hold on, phrasing here. He did not lift the ban on Pete Rose and the Black Sox. What Rob Manfred did was he ruled that lifetime banishments for players or managers ends at death. And so what that means is not that Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson and Buck Weaver and Eddie Seacott, not that they were removed from being banned, but that banishment ends when they die. And so now, presumably, all of those players who were banned previously will be eligible to be elected into the Hall of Fame by the Veterans Committee, which next meets in December of 2027. So, you know, a bit of legalese there. And I wonder, well, let's, you know what, before I get into it, let's first start with the significance of Pete Rose and exactly what he meant to anybody who grew up rooting for the Big Red Machine, the Reds, and Pete Rose. My good buddy Tom Waddle, who hosts afternoons here on the flagship station for the White Sox, ESPN 1000. Tom Waddle, along with Sylvie. Waddle grew up in Sharonville, Ohio, and he grew up with baseball being his first love. And Pete Rose was his hero. As a young boy watching baseball in Ohio, he fell in love with how hard Charlie Hustle played the game. And so I pulled Tom Waddle into the studio with me just to reflect on Pete Rose being at least ruled on, no longer on the banished from baseball because he died in September of 2024. And this was our exchange back on Wednesday night.
It's a pleasure for me to be able to wax poetically about growing up in Cincinnati. I was born in 1967. So, you know, the Big Red Machine in 75 and 76 and the years before and after were right in my wheelhouse. Cincinnati is a huge baseball town. I was a baseball fan first before football became part of my life. And, you know, who better to make you so-called drunk on the sport than Pete Rose, who played the game the way that it was meant to be played, played it harder than anybody I've ever seen, played multiple positions. It was just a joy to watch that entire team, but there was no question who the leader of that group was. It was Pete Rose, and you know, I kind of, like a lot of kids, you mimic a lot of what you saw from Pete in your own little league baseball.
In your backyard,
yeah.
Out.
Well, I mean, like, I would take the field, you know, for the East Hills Sporting Good Bears,
yes,
which was my team growing up.
Bears.
I was the first one to run out onto the field at shortstop, and I had to be at shortstop before anybody else got to their positions because that's where the way Pete did it. So I'm thrilled to see that Pete has been taken off the ineligible list. It is, it's bittersweet for me,
sure,
because, as you know, I'm biased. Having grown up in Cincinnati, as I said, and watched Pete play, I thought Pete should have been eligible for the Hall of Fame for years. Would never try to talk anybody out of an opposing perspective. But that's just how I feel, having had the great pleasure of growing up in Cincinnati and watching that team play, led by Pete Rose.
Do you have a parlay for Pete as we let you go?
That's not funny, Jeff.
Three-team parlay.
It is part of the story.
We will bet on the Reds if you want to do it that way.
It's part of the story,
just the
so
way,
I understand.
Just the way Pete did it, Tom.
I will bet you that Pete finally gets in to Cooperstown. Ooh. How about that? Do you want that
first
play?
Ballot? I'll take those odds.
First ballot, because everyone's going to come to their senses.
All right.
For sure.
All right. Thanks, Tom. So there you go. I will say, we didn't have a ton of time because I ran that in our pregame show. I would have debated it a little more with Waddle had we had a little bit more time. I don't think that he necessarily will be elected into the Hall of Fame because, as I joked at the end there, a parlay for Pete. Pete Rose broke the cardinal sin of baseball. He bet on his team. He bet on the games that he was directly involved with as the manager. He could affect the outcome. And I know, I'm aware that Pete Rose said he never bet against the Reds, as if that somehow should eradicate what he actually did. He admitted by saying, I never bet against them. He admits, you know, he self-incriminates that he did indeed bet on them. And so you can say a couple of things. Okay, so I'm just supposed to take your word for it, Pete Rose, that you never bet against the Reds because you say so, even though for the longest time you were adamant that you didn't gamble until it was eventually the evidence was so overwhelming that you could no longer deny it. And so you pivoted and said, I never bet against them. Okay. At the very least, then you could also say, well, why then did the days that you thought, what, the days you did not bet on the Reds, was that because you didn't like the matchups and so maybe you were just abstaining because you didn't like your team's odds and so you were using the inside information as the manager of a baseball team as you were committing the cardinal sin? And then for anybody who likes to use the argument that, listen, it's 2025. Pete was ahead of his time. He knew that gambling wasn't that big of a deal. Look at all the money, all the influx of cash that has come from your DraftKings, from your FanDuels, from your Hard Rock casinos, whatever. Here's the reality. If you bet on baseball as a player or a manager still today, guess what? You're going to end up on the banished for life list. It's still the cardinal sin. If you're involved in the game, you do not get to bet on baseball. So that doesn't in some way exonerate Pete Rose, because now Major League Baseball and all of professional sports are willing to take cash from gambling operators because they've seen how lucrative it can be. Listen, it's fine. It's no longer in the dark, shadowy places. And so we can talk about it freely now, and you can also legally wager on it. But again, not if you're playing in the game. It's that simple. And so because of that, I don't believe that Pete Rose will get in. I do think the majority of the people who are on the Veterans Committee will recognize that that is still a big no-no. And so I would be surprised if when they finally do meet in December of 27, if both Pete Rose, Shoeless Jackson, and you can add in, if those two aren't going to get in, I can't see how Eddie Seacott and Buck Weaver would either. So I would be surprised if any of them actually end up in the Hall of Fame. I think it was Rob Manfred kowtowing to political pressure. And for all of those who have in high places recently asked for Pete Rose to be exonerated, I think Rob Manfred found a creative way of walking that tightrope, allowing Pete Rose to be on the ballot the next time they meet. And then I think he'll be able to just kind of skirt the issue when ultimately I don't think he'll end up getting in. I will give you, we're up against a little bit short on time here. So I do want to play though Joe Maddon. Joe Maddon actually joined Waddle and Sylvie this week and addressed Pete Rose. Of course, Joe Maddon, longtime manager for the Tampa Bay Rays, Chicago Cubs, and the Los Angeles Angels. Joe Maddon talked about Pete Rose.
I think he served his time. He did his time. And it's just unfortunate that it has to be posthumously that he's going to be recognized. What he went through, I think if he had been more contrite early on, it might have changed things a little bit. But nevertheless, you know, he was embarrassed by it all, I'm sure. He did his thing his way. It's the way Pete was. I mean, just... I got to know him a little bit at the very end there. He was actually at the Chicago Card Show and had a great conversation with him. But nobody played the game harder than he did. Obviously, to care about winning, give me other guys, probably Ty Cobb, you can mention others, but nobody cared about winning. Nobody played the game harder. Nobody was more of a team player. How many positions did he play? And on top of that, he's a switch hitter. Everything about him indicated that the guy was a winner. Yes, I thought he did his time. How many ever years from the moment he was suspended till he passed away? And I thought that if they could have done that even 4, 5, 6 years before he had passed, I thought that still would have served as time served and let's move on.
Yeah.
And then permit him to do what is right, because the guy was that good. Okay, did some bad things. A lot of people have done bad things in the world today, a lot worse than he's done, and they get out without any kind of severity, whereas he is a baseball man. You know, he's a baseball player, bet on the game. Can't do that, absolutely. He did his time. Let him go. And I really hope that the veterans group's going to have to vote on him. I hope he gets in on the first vote.
Agree to disagree, Joe Maddon. Again, that was Maddon with Waddle and Sylvie earlier this week on Pete Rose, having served his time. He did serve his time, but I don't think that he should be allowed into the Hall of Fame because, again, he did bet on baseball. So that's just my opinion, my humble opinion. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, former White Sox general manager Rick Hahn was on Major League Baseball Network. He had some interesting things to say regarding his tenure with the White Sox and how things went awry. And Braden Montgomery also had a conversation on Major League Baseball Network. We'll share them both coming up with you next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Every Saturday, 2 hours prior to your pregame coverage. Today, pregame starts at 12:40 with a 1:20 first pitch coming your way at Wrigley Field. Game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Cubs. Hopefully the Sox can continue their streak of winning series. That's at 2 right now, but they're going to need to win the next 2 if they're going to take this series from the Chicago Cubs. It will be Sean Burke on the mound for the White Sox, opposed by Matthew Boyd later today. Hey, Sox fans, enjoy an all-inclusive game day experience on the Fan Deck. Perfect for hosting your group of friends, family, clients, or colleagues. Includes a customizable food and beverage package. For more information, visit whitesox.com/partyareas or call 312-674-1000. All right. Rick Hahn was on MLB Network earlier this week joining Brian Kenny and talked about how the White Sox were set up for success, but unfortunately things went somewhat awry. This is that conversation from Major League Baseball Network.
December of 2016, coming off a 78-win season. That's your big trade. That's you make the call. Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, Adam Eaton, and you bring back the foundation of the next run, including Michael Kopech, Eloy Jimenez, Dylan Cease, Ronaldo Lopez. That's some haul that you got there. Well, how do you go about making the decision that we need to you were 178 games. Yeah. You said, no, we need to rebuild. How do you make that call?
You know, we actually got off to a decent start that season in 16. I think we were 23-10 out of the gate, but it was done a lot with smoke and mirrors and on the back of Matt Latos doing an unsustainable early performance. And as the wheels slowly came off that season, I did a press conference at one point, and Scott Reifert, our longtime head of PR, turned to me after the press conference and he said, did you have to use alliteration? And I'm like, what are you even talking about? He said, you said we are mired in mediocrity. And that is all the story is going to be going forward, is that the team of the White Sox thinks you're mired in mediocrity. And that really was the motivation, because when I first got there in 01 and joined Kenny in his first year as GM, winning a World Series as quickly as possible and breaking what ultimately turned out to be an 88-year-old drought was of the utmost importance. Now, we obviously, in my opinion, we actually probably had a better team in 06 on paper, but we ran out of steam in the second half. Took a step back in 07 and then won the division again in 08. So we had sort of this little bit of a run where you tried to keep feeding the beast. We may have tried too long to keep feeding the beast and doing short-term gap fix on the free agent market that we could afford or that were tolerated.
Right.
And ultimately, that's not satisfying. So when we were stuck there in the middle, and not winning enough and not winning consistently enough, the organization, you know, we had conversations with Jerry. We were very honest. We were like, we need to take a step back.
Right.
We need to. Yeah. The problem's not the talent 1 through 6. The problem is the talent 7 through 35.
Right.
I want to get to the better depth.
I want to get to, because we're running out of time, but I want to. Sure. 2021, I always pray, you won 93 games. You win the Central by 13 games, right? So that's a big win. And you have this interesting club all around. How did it unravel? Like that, because again, there you are. Again, it's almost forgotten now. You're 93 wins, and you're losing a playoff series to the Astros. Yeah. It happens, but so how did it unravel from there?
You know, we made the playoffs in 22, which sadly, in some ways, but in terms of what we were trying to accomplish, an accomplishment, made the postseason 2 years in a row for the first time in franchise history. Mm. So we certainly felt entering 22 that we were going to be able to sustain this thing. We had some bad luck in injuries, like everyone does. But, you know, the 21 team, we had a lot of injuries, and we wound up being able to plug those holes from internal options. We had 9 guys taken in the first round between 13 and 21 contribute to that 21 team. It was a tremendous organizational win. So you're absolutely right. We go into 22 feeling good about ourselves. Ultimately, we had perhaps overestimated a little bit in terms of our players' growth. We obviously made some bets and some young players thinking they were going to grow into the level that we projected them to be and that they were starting to show signs of, which boxed us a little bit from a payroll standpoint. The injuries hurt. And, you know, the lack, you know, again, but more on the touchy-feely extreme, our culture had wandered a little bit. And the vibe changed in that clubhouse, and we sort of lost a little bit of that competitiveness. And, and unfortunately, that spiraled into 23.
That was Rick Hahn recounting what went wrong for the White Sox at the end of his tenure as while he was the GM for your Chicago White Sox. Braden Montgomery also hopped on Major League Baseball Network earlier this week. He has been just destroying things as of late. Basically all season long, Montgomery, the latest trying to pull up here is his, Winston-Salem right now. His numbers are absurd. The switch hitting Braden Montgomery is hitting .357 in just 16 games since he was elevated. Remember, he started the season at Low A Canapolis, where he just absolutely throttled that affiliate. So Montgomery right now is hitting .357. He has 4 home runs, 13 RBIs, again, in just 16 games. He's walked 8 times. So he's got a .439 on base, a .679 slug, and an .1118 OPS. So I'd say Braden Montgomery looks like he very well could be, if all things go according to plan, a legit middle-of-the-order hitter in the not-too-distant future for the Chicago White Sox. Montgomery hopped on MLB Network's morning show with Robert Flores and Mark DeRosa and had some fun things to say.
I would love to know your reaction. You're drafted by the White Sox, and then all of a sudden you're going to a new organization. What did you think when you heard that you were part of the deal?
Yeah, no, it was a time of a lot of emotions. Obviously, it was just getting acclimated to being in pro ball, and then now having to pivot and go to a new org with a lot more new people. It was confusing times, but I was excited just to be able to get back on the field. At that time, I was still just rehabbing and getting ready for the season.
Well, Braden, it doesn't seem to have affected. Once you cross the white lines, you have gotten off to an awesome start with your minor league career. Take me inside. Is there anything? I mean, you played big brand of college baseball. Is there anything that they're attacking you different or something that's kind of caught you off guard or something you're comfortable with? Like the transition from elite college baseball to the lower minor leagues?
Yeah, I just kind of started with a fresh slate. Just wanted to go in and do what I can, see what they're doing. It's a different thing every night, and so I just want to kind of pick up on how they're throwing me, what I'm seeing, and get a good pitch over the plate no matter what it is and drive it hard. So,
Braden, you started as a two-way player.
Yeah.
You were over there in Stanford, then you transferred to Texas A&M, two great programs. How did the college ball and playing for these two great organizations or programs help you become the player that you are today?
Yeah, they helped immensely. Just being able to see good talent, and I feel like the more I'm on a field, the more I'm playing against good players, the more the game just slows down a little bit, and I get a feel for what I want to do on the field and how I want to drive the ball all over the yard.
Jay, Braden, you referenced it earlier. It was almost a year ago that you broke your right ankle in Game 1 of the Super Regional. As a member of the Texas A&M Aggies, you were picked 12th ultimately in that draft by the Red Sox. What was that whole, now looking back almost a year later, what was that experience like, and what did you learn about yourself?
Yeah, it was tough. The hardest part was just, I mean, after it happened, like, it's like, yeah, my ankle's broken, but now I've got to actually sit through the 2 months of not being able to do anything and just wheeling around on a scooter and hanging out. So it was a lot of time just sitting with myself, my thoughts, and being able to kind of reignite that passion I have for the game once it gets taken away. And I think it set me up in a good spot for coming back and getting back on the field. And I've been been enjoying every single day of being able to be on the field.
Who did you lean on during that time?
My family. My family, I spent a lot of time with them. I got a puppy, and so I hung out with my family and my dogs.
What kind of puppy?
A cockapoo.
Oh, there we go.
A little tiny dog.
Yeah. What's his name?
Boosie. Boosie.
Boosie.
Hey, wait. So, look, you know, Mark and I, we have young kids, right, young boys. They want to continue to play baseball in college and all of that. You went to Stanford, Texas A&M, dream schools. Then you get drafted. What would you say to that young player who would love to be in your position one day?
Yeah, I'd say that you got to be undeniable in all facets. I mean, you can't just want to play on the field, because I feel like your mind is what ultimately takes you as far as you're going to go. And so cultivating that as a young guy and just giving it my all in the classroom and wanting to develop in all facets, I think that just helps me to go even further in the game. I think the mind is everything.
Braden, you're a product of the MLB Develops program, that fine organization that has turned out a bunch of good ball players. You're also part of a very interesting young core that the White Sox are now developing. 5 top 100 prospects, according to MLB Pipeline. When you see this and the potential of this organization, of which you figure to be a big part of, what comes to mind?
Yeah, it's exciting. Getting to know those guys in spring training and seeing how they go about their business, I'm excited to see them do well, and I'm excited to join them. I think the sky's the limit with this group. The guys are willing to do what they can to bring some wins to the table and to ultimately bring some wins to Chicago.
He's been absolutely killing it at Winston-Salem, Braden Montgomery. We've seen Edgar Caro and Chase Mydroth arrive and have some success at the major league level. Tim Elko, it's very early for him, essentially a week. He did have the big home run on Mother's Day, still waiting for him to kind of get a little bit more comfortable, get his feet wet, but he looks like he has a chance here to make an impact as well. But Braden Montgomery, he is the one who I think is turning a lot of heads right now, and he's at single A right now, but if his trajectory continues to ascend the way it has, he very easily could find himself as a top 20 prospect in all of baseball when the season concludes and those prospect lists start matriculating out next season. Wouldn't be surprised at all if Monty is up there in the top 20, and I could very easily see him sneaking into the top 2 or 3 for the White Sox organization, which would be a huge boon, because when you consider what the White Sox have right now in the organization with Schultz, with Smith, with Taylor, that would be very, very encouraging. So hopefully he can continue to do exactly what he's been doing, because he has really turned some heads. And it looks like Chris Getz has himself a really nice piece that he got in that Garrett Crochet deal, along with Kyle Teal, too. Kyle Teal, 14-game hitting streak that he was on the other day. So lots going well for the White Sox right now at the minor league levels. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Join us Saturday, June 7th, as the White Sox take on the Royals at 3:10 p.m. Get here early for Sox Crawl Taste of the Sox presented by Blue Moon, and enjoy an exclusive pre-game crawl inside the stadium with Jack McDowell, Blackjack. Autograph signings, food and drinks, sneak peek of new offerings, entertainment, and more. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/crawl. When we come back, it is the inaugural rivalry weekend across Major League Baseball, and that means that the Mets went to go visit the Bronx, and that meant that a return of a certain Mr. Soto was in store last night. I'll let you hear how the Yankees crowd responded to Juan Soto returning after helping the team to play in the World Series last year. We'll do that next, right here on the ESP 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
I think a lot of Yankee fans feel betrayed, because they showed him so much love from the first game to the last game of the World Series, and I guess they thought that that would get them a little extra consideration. Maybe it did, but they are already protesting Juan Soto before he goes out to right. He's coming out to a spot that was such a place of love and glory for him last year, and it's going to be a completely different vibe right now.
And there you hear the chorus of boos as the Yankees fans in the Bronx turned their back on Juan Soto when he ran out to the field for the Mets yesterday in the Mets-Yankees game. I'm Jeff Mellor. This is White Sox Weekly. And you heard Michael Kay there right there on the Yes Network. Look, yeah, they felt, why did you feel betrayed? Juan Soto had an on-base of 419 last season. He hit 41 home runs, which was a career high. He's driven 109 RBIs. He had 128 runs scored. And stole seven bases. All he did was deliver exactly what you asked him to do. And then when free agency arrived, guess what? The New York Mets offered him more money on a per-year basis and total value. That's it. That simple. You want to be mad? Be mad that your organization didn't step up to the plate and match the Mets' offer. Because I do think if the Yankees would have matched the Mets' offer, I think he probably would have stayed in New York. Or he is in New York, but I think he probably would have stayed in the Bronx with the Yankees, because that right field porch is set up nicely for Juan Soto's swing. But you know what? Guess what? Mets paid him more money, and I think a lot of people out there would have taken more money. It's just that simple. Capitalism, folks. Let's pause 10 seconds for a legal ID. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly as we get set for White Sox and Cubs, game number 2 of 3 this weekend at Wrigley Field. I'm Jeff Mellor. Pre-game coverage will start at 12:40. 1:20 first pitch comes your way with Len and DJ. Sox fans, head to the ballpark on Sunday, June 8th, as we celebrate your favorite fuzzy green dude's 21st birthday. That's right. Join Southpaw and his friends for a special pre-game patio party celebration when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability to purchase tickets. Visit whitesox.com/promos. It does not say you need to be 21, but if we're celebrating Southpaw's 21st birthday, I'm going to have to get more information about this, because I don't know. Feels like that could be a fun bash. Buying Southpaw shots, hanging out. What would you rather be doing on June 8th? Jesse Rogers is live at Wrigley Field as he takes in White Sox and Cubs, game number 2 of 3. Jesse was in Italy. He was in Rome as the Pope was being elected, but he dropped the ball. Jesse Rogers, you're there. A Chicago-born Pope is getting set to be elected. You're there for what? You left hours before it actually became official. What went wrong, man?
Actually, I was in Rome when it happened. It just wasn't in Vatican Square.
Okay.
I've been in Vatican Square all day and the night before, but just not when the final election happened. Look, I could have really gotten the scoop on whether he was a Cubs or Sox fan before anybody. And I did drop the ball there. So I am disappointed. I'm glad we got it cleared up. He is a Sox fan. Yes. Some confusion there.
It's no surprise. God's on the right side of baseball.
I hope he's throwing out the first pitch in the near future over on the south side. We'll see. That'd be quite something. Pope throwing out the first pitch would be
amazing. Yes. I'm sure Brooks is working on that. I have seen several sightings of people in Pope garb over the last last weekend and whatnot. So that's probably going to become a regular thing. But the White Sox are commemorating the seat that Pope Leo was sitting in on Monday. They're going to have a special ceremony that they're unveiling at 3:30 on Monday. So it should be there for anybody who's coming out to the game. You'll be able see what the White Sox. Hey, listen, why not, right? You got the holiest of holies on your side. So good things are happening, my man.
Yeah, well, hopefully he can bless the rebuild. And in a short period of time, things will look better on the field for the White Sox. It wasn't a great day yesterday, Jeff, but where do you want to start?
Well, real quick, though, because you were there, and I've never attended a Pope being elected, what was it like to be in Vatican City as that was going on?
Yeah, surreal. I used that word a few times on the radio this week. It really sums it up. And I'll tell you, you know how when you're at something that is surreal, like it's the little moments that hit you? Mm-hmm. I got to be honest, it was actually after seeing the first two votes, meaning the black smoke,
yes,
it was leaving the square that hit me, because it felt like I was leaving a White Sox game or a Cub game or a concert. It's everyone's going in all different directions. You're looking for a cab, you're looking for the subway, and I'm walking with my wife and you're trying to cross paths with people and stuff. And I'm thinking, we just left the election of the Pope, mm-hmm. even though he didn't get elected. Like, it was such a weird moment leaving because 50,000 people were leaving the square, just like you leave a concert or a baseball game or whatever. So it was some of those little weird moments that were really surreal. Obviously, everybody just staring at a chimney for hours on end was weird as well. And then the final thing was just the amount of coverage. I joked that it was the Super Bowl of Catholicism because there were so many TV stations there from around the world waiting for this thing to happen and doing interviews. And I actually did a couple interviews with foreign TV. So, I mean, I could mention about 10 different surreal moments, but it was just leaving with 50,000 people, yet it wasn't a concert. It wasn't a baseball game. It was the election of the Pope felt the weirdest of all the things. I know that's a small thing, but that's when it hit me.
No, it's listen, I'm not going to lie. It was very entertaining to watch the Cubs prematurely claim him and then the White Sox. It's just, I'm just like this morning, I just threw it into the mix. I think it's part of the rivalry now. The Cubs claimed him because they had erroneous information, and now the White Sox get to, you know, throw that back in their face. It's just another element to the White Sox-Cubs rivalry that I think is going to be something that we mention now going forward, whether fans like it or not.
And not to get too deep on this, but part of the interesting part for me is I am Jewish, so I didn't have a dog in this fight. Yes. So I do think the Cubs should claim a rabbi, and we should really face this thing, Pope versus rabbi, and really go at it.
Oh, boy. It's already at a fevered pitch. I don't think we need to bring a religious interesting. Okay.
So, yeah.
Nevertheless, though, Jesse Rogers, ESPN Major League Baseball insider, joining me here on White Sox Weekly. All right, Jess, you're the perfect man to address this next topic because for as long as I remember listening to Jesse Rogers, who's done lots and lots of work in the sports radio, he was there at the infancy stages of it, the ongoing sports debate that would never die, it was Pete Rose, should he or should he not be in the Hall of Fame? It only took Pete Rose dying for it to actually be somewhat cleared up this week when Rob Manfred, now here's the legalese though, he didn't necessarily remove Pete Rose from the ban list. What he did was he said lifetime banishment ends at death. So it was an interesting way by the former or current lawyer Rob Manfred to go about it. What's your thought and what's been the reaction from people around baseball? Not just Pete Rose, but of course it also affects the members of the Black Sox.
Yeah, well, I'm going to just take you down into the White Sox dugout before pregame here. I mean, before the show here and during pregame, mm-hmm. we had this conversation with a lot of the media down there. Bob Nightingale, the esteemed writer from the USA Today, in town, and we talked about this. I started asking some of my brethren, like a Paul Sullivan or Scott Merkin, if he was on the ballot where the writers could vote. And there's an argument to be made that he should be, because he never got that chance with the writers. Mm-hmm. Now, for people that don't know, you can only be on the vote on the ballot with the writers for 10 years, and obviously that passed, but he was never on it in the first place. So it'd have to be an exception to the rule. So I started asking people, and it was yes, I'd vote for him. No, I'd vote for him. Yes, it's pretty split. Now, that was with some media down there. I will say around the league, I mentioned this on the air the other day, most of the older people I've talked to, meaning executives or even Craig Council on the other side of here in town. I didn't ask Venable today, but they're all like, yeah, good for him. Now, good for him that he's eligible now. Mm-hmm. I think they respect him as a player. Nobody approves, obviously, of what he did as a manager. I will tell you, if he was on the ballot with the writers, I would vote yes.
Okay.
Because I can separate what he did as a manager. Now, some people say, well, he must have bet as a player. Well, they didn't prove that. They proved that he bet as a manager. So I can separate playing versus managing. Most of the older people in the game kind of remember him as a player, are saying good for him. Not everyone.
Yeah.
But now let's go to the committee that will decide his fate. It's going to be made up of people that also decided Barry Bonds' fate and Roger Clemens' fate and those guys. And so far, none of those guys have gotten in. So there's a strong feeling he will not get in the first time around, with the Veterans Committee or Eras Committee, whatever you call it. And so there's still a good chance he's out for a while here. I mean, they don't meet again until 2027. So I'd vote for him, but I'm not sure some of the veterans that played this game will, even though some of them are his contemporaries. I think they kind of put him in that steroid class, even though I don't think that's fair. So I know I'm rambling a little bit, but that's kind of the feeling that I got from around the league and even today at the ballpark.
Last thing I got for you, because I'm up against it, Jesse, but yeah. What about Luis Robert Jr., the trade rumors circulating? You mentioned Bob Nightingale there. He obviously a couple weeks ago mentioned how the White Sox were trying to see if they could, you know, figure out something and maybe potentially trade him by Memorial Day. Obviously, I think he needs to hit better for that to come to fruition. What is the latest around baseball regarding Luis Robert Jr.?
Well, people are watching him. There's no doubt. I don't think anything's imminent. I do like some of the interior numbers. He's not chasing as much. The strikeout to walk ratio is better than it's ever been. And look, in this lineup right now, if a team wants to take a look at him and say, look, he has no protection, they're not playing for anything in terms of the standings, maybe these internal numbers are a sign of good things to come, and we will make that trade. So I would say he could be traded anytime from this moment till July 31st. I don't think you put, like, they want to trade him by this date or have to trade him by this date. It's just when the moment is right, and that means when Chris hears what he wants to hear. Now, I think traditionally you do want to see him get hot. But again, there are some signs throughout the first 6 weeks that he's actually a better hitter than he's shown in the past. The results just haven't been there. So I know teams are monitoring it. The Reds are certainly one since the offseason. They made a below market, you know, sort of offer in terms of Chris Getz's world. They're going to continue to look at him. The Phillies are looking at him. But none of that's changed. This is all not new news. I think Getz is waiting for the right offer, meaning the two top prospects.
Makes sense. Great stuff, Jess. Appreciate it, man.
Okay, be well, Jeff.
Jesse Rogers, ESPN Major League Baseball Insider. Reggaeton music fans, join us at the ballpark next Friday, May 23rd, for Reggaeton Night as the Sox take on the Rangers at 6:40 p.m. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show presented by Topo Chico Hard Seltzer. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. When we come back, we'll get you set for White Sox and Cubs with some of the best moments over the last 25 years between these two right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Recap the game, Cap and J-Hood, weekday mornings at 7.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller as we're getting you set for game number 2 of 3 up at Wrigley Field between the White Sox and Cubs for the Crosstown Series amongst Major League Baseball's inaugural rivalry weekend. And first pitch, of course, coming your way at 1:20 today. Our pregame coverage will begin at 12:40. So I wanted to run through some of the best moments during this series for White Sox fans. And I'll start by saying it really did feel like yesterday we could be on the verge of the Miguel Vargas game against the Cubs. Unfortunately, I fear it turned into the Pete Crow Armstrong game for the Cubs. So that was disappointing, but it was still encouraging to see Miguel Vargas do what he did, 4-for-4, get a couple of home runs and a stellar defensive play. So he continues to look like he very well could be breaking out, and the very reason why Chris Getz made him the centerpiece at the trade deadline when he offloaded Eric Fetty and Michael Kopech. So that is some continued good news. Just unfortunate that the White Sox could not capitalize on what could have been the Miguel Vargas game against the Cubs. Hopefully today, maybe Miguel Vargas goes off for another 2 home runs and he has himself a weekend similar to the one that Jose Abreu had back in the 2020 season. Recall, Jose Abreu, it was the COVID-shortened year, and Jose Abreu actually ended up winning the AL MVP that season, and I think largely based on the strength of what he did in one weekend at Wrigley Field.
Stayed up. Jose swats it left center field, way back there at the wall. Bring them all home. 3-run home run. Jose Abreu. And the Sox have stormed out to a 5-0 lead.
Jose Abreu is red hot.
2-2. Oh,
one more for the road. Bring him home again. It's still bouncing around. Second one tonight for Jose. So now it's about 2,500 feet on Jupiter, and they'd be divided. Jose to right field. Well struck. Very well struck and out of here. Bring him home for the lead. Top six.
That man has a sense of urgency and a flair for the dramatic. He untied the ball game. Kyle Hendricks gives up an opposite field home run, and Jose Abreu comes through once again to lead the way. And Contreras is telling him, bounce it, it's 0-2.
Oh, it hung. Jose in the air, left field, way back. Bring him home again. Look out, Maglio. A cement mixer to beat all cement mixers, and it's 5-2.
Jose got that curveball. It got too much of the plate. Contreras gave him the curveball sign. He patted the ground.
0-2. Jose in the air left field. One more time. Bring him home.
Well, we told you back in the sixth inning that Jose sometimes takes it into his own hands. We didn't believe at that point that three home runs later, he'd have a perfect night, 4-for-4 with a walk, and three bombs.
Jose in the air, way back! Oh my goodness! Batman Jose is at it again, and Darvish can only laugh. This is outrageous!
Outrageous indeed, Jason Benetti, as Jose Abreu would hit six home runs in a weekend series, three games against the Cubs back in 2020. That actually meant that Jose Abreu hit the second most home runs at Wrigley Field that season, behind only Ian Happ, who had eight on the season. Happ played in 32 games that year. Abreu, six home runs in three games that weekend. Absolutely astonishing. He ended up with a .375 average, .464 on base, and an .1167 OPS against the Cubs that season. Just absurd in 2020. I will say, as you heard Benetti's calls, sure is nice to have fans back in the stands, right? That's the one thing that stood out from all those highlights of Jose Abreu back in 2020, the COVID-shortened season. All right, we move to June 18th, 2019, a year earlier or so, just about. Eloy Jimenez, remember, of course, he was a key piece along with Dylan Cease in the Jose Quintana deal that the White Sox made with the Cubs as the Cubs were trying to push and extend their championship run after having won in 2016 the World Series. They were trying to do what they could to stay in contention, and so they traded Cease and Eloy Jimenez for Jose Quintana. That was obviously, those were the critical pieces in that deal. And Eloy Jimenez returned to Wrigley Field, and in the ninth inning, the top of the ninth, came up and gave the White Sox a come-from-behind lead.
There's the go-ahead run, standing at first base. Jimenez, in the air, left field! He's your hero tonight! Welcome to Wrigley! He cracked the bat on that swing and still drove it out of the park. The bat shattered in his hands.
Thanks, Cubs!
Thanks, Cubs, indeed, for that emphatic punctuation by Jason Benetti, which did a nice job of, I think, really encapsulating how all White Sox fans felt in that moment. Now, I will say, a few years removed, I don't think it unfolded the way that White Sox fans hoped that it would, even though Dylan Cease was extremely productive for a couple of seasons with the White Sox kind of fronting their rotation. Eloy Jimenez's tenure with the White Sox certainly did not end the way most Sox fans ended up hoping that it would. I move now to 2002, back on June 28th. I was actually in attendance for this game at then U.S. Cellular Field, now Rate Field. The White Sox were trailing 8-0 with Kerry Wood on the mound. Paul Konerko actually took a pitch in the face from Kerry Wood in this game early in the second inning. He dusted himself off, came to the plate later on, and after trailing 8-0, the White Sox mounted their comeback, led by
the ball hit hard into left field. Brown going back. Get up! Stretch! It will! You can print on the board!
Yes!
And we are right back in this ballgame.
Couple of two-run shots from Paulie in that game. He was 4-for-4 with a couple of home runs. Both were two-run shots. The first one came in the fifth inning when the Cubs were leading 8-2. That obviously cut it 8-4. And then that home run in the sixth put the White Sox ahead. They went on to win that game 13-9 after trailing 8-0. And if you've been in attendance for some Sox and Cubs games, you know what the swings can be like when your team jumps out to a massive lead like that. You are certainly giving it to the opposition's fans in the stands. That just is second nature. And so to be in attendance at U.S. Cellular Field that day and going from the lowest of lows against your bitter rival to the highest of highs on that day, that was at that moment, because that was prior to 2005, obviously. In the moment, that might have been about as good as I felt leaving a baseball game back in 2002. That was a special day. I got June 28th, 2002, when Paul Konerko helped to lead the White Sox back after trailing 8-0 to the Cubs to a 13-9 comeback win. However, I don't know if it actually matched the next game, which I'm about to talk about, which actually occurred almost a year prior to that, a little more than a year. Back on June 8th in 2001, Carlos Lee, on a Friday night, came up with the game tied up at 3 apiece, bases loaded, 2 outs in the bottom of the 10th inning, and good old El Caballo stepped to the plate against Courtney Duncan.
That ball hit deep into left field, way back. He looks up. You can't put it on the board. Yes! A grand slam homer by El Caballo, Carlos Lee, and the Sox win it here in the bottom of the 10th inning.
That one was also fantastic. Carlos Lee with the walk-off grand slam at the Cell that season in 2001. I was also in attendance for that one. I recall that was a Friday night. That was a fun way of leaving the ballpark and a very good way to start your weekends. So Carlos Lee, who always had a knack for just crushing the Cubs, he ended up hitting 39 home runs against the Cubs in his career. You know, plenty with the White Sox, also plenty also with the Brewers when he was on their team as well. Remember, obviously, Carlos Lee was part of the swap in the Scott Pesednik trade, which we all remember fondly because of what Scotty Pods was able to do at the top of the lineup during the 2005 and 2006 season, the World Series championship year in 2005. All right, so I mentioned 2005 and 2006. This, I think, still stands out to me as the most memorable moment during this series, and it happened on May 20th, 2006. So the White Sox, fresh off of their World Series championship, feeling great. The White Sox were just rolling early in that year. 2006, it did feel like the White Sox had a very legitimate shot of repeating as World Series champs, the way they came out like gangbusters, and also the way they absolutely dominated in the playoffs behind their majestic pitching. It felt like 2006, at least throughout the All-Star break, it felt like the White Sox had a very realistic chance of repeating. And May 20th, 2006, of course, A.J. Pierzynski comes barreling down at home plate with Michael Barrett behind the plate for the Cubbies.
Krasinski wanting to know, am I going? He is going. Here comes a throw by Merton. It is a collision at the plate. And Krasinski not only bangs into Barrett, bangs onto the plate, and here they go. Posadnik getting into it with Barrett. And now both dugouts empty behind home plate. I mean, there is some hooking going on in the bottom of two piles. Krasinski ran right through Barrett and then slammed his hand on home plate. And Barrett came after him. Posadnik wound up more involved with Barrett than Krasinski did.
Tom Brenneman there on Fox calling the fight between Michael Barrett and A.J. Krasinski. The White Sox would go on to win that game 7-0. And unfortunately, the 2006 season, that might have been one of the high moments of that year, because once the second half hit, the White Sox kind of petered out and unfortunately did not make the playoffs that season. But from 05 through the start of that 06 season, remember, the White Sox added Jim Thome to their lineup for 06, and it really did feel like they had a shot to go ahead and win back-to-back titles. I thought we were on the verge of something. Unfortunately, did not quite play out that way, but it's all good. We'll always have 2005 White Sox fans, which we are celebrating quite a bit this year at the ballpark. Don't forget the weekend of July 11th, when we will be at Wright Field for the unveiling of the Mark Burley statue. Lots of 2005 players from that team will be in attendance, so make sure you make your plans to be out at the ballpark that weekend. It's going to be a festive time, but it's always a festive time at Wright Field. All right, that's going to wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. Thank you to Miguel Vargas for joining us, the star of yesterday's game for the White Sox. Hopefully he can continue that role and keep it rolling into a win for the White Sox today. We'll get the pregame coverage going. Thanks as well to Jesse Rogers. And thank you to Jake Santos and Brendan Riley for producing this version of White Sox Weekly. We've got the pregame coverage starting in 5 minutes. Lennon DJ will have first pitch of White Sox and Cubs up at 1:20. I'm Jeff Meller. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.